Can You Be Financially Successful? And a Renter. Yes, and today's guest is going to prove that to you. Welcome to Making Sense. It's the podcast for people who want financial freedom without giving up their coffee, supported by our friends at KiwiBank. I'm Frances Cook. I'm a financial journalist and fellow financial freedom seeker who makes money simple for you. So, renting and being financially successful. Yes, doable. Yes, you'll need a strategy. One of the interesting ones is rentvesting. It's typically one people use when the area they want to live in is pretty expensive. You're stuck there for work, or it offers a great lifestyle, or whatever. You're in an area with pretty high property prices. So, you rent where you are, and you buy an investment property elsewhere. Instead of buying a house, buying elsewhere somewhere cheaper. You're still on the property ladder. You've got an asset that's hopefully going up in value. It's bringing in money, which ideally offsets that rent that you're still paying. Okay, so all well and good in theory, but how do you make it work in reality? Well, let's talk to someone who's doing it. Making Sense is on a mission to make money simple, and I just couldn't do that without the support of KiwiBank. It's really important to me to only work with companies that understand that mission. And for KiwiBank, their purpose is to help Kiwi and Aotearoa be better off. So bringing you real stories of different approaches to finance is one of the ways they're making a difference to the lives of their customers. This is making Kiwi better off. This is Kiwi. All right, welcome Ilse Wolf from Wolf Property Coaching, which we'll get into that side of it soon, but I'm just fascinated by the personal decision you made first. You decided to move out of your family home in order to rentvest. So let's start at the beginning. What's rentvesting?
What is rentvesting? It's a concept that took myself a decent length of time to get my head around, if I'm perfectly honest. I've been investing in real estate for almost 20 years. And so that combined with this really, I guess, I don't know, quintessential or very like deep-seated Kiwi thought that, you know, to become an adult is to own your own home. Mm. It actually was my husband, Taylor, who ran the figures or ran the numbers, as we always say. And it was irrefutable. You know, we were looking at this. We were living in Grey Lynn in central Auckland, which we thought was, you know, in an earlier stage of our life. We'll talk about stages of life and values changing. But leading up to that decision was, you know, we wanted to get into central Auckland, own our own home. And that seemed to be what we thought was our ultimate success pre-children. But about 18 months ago, we were looking at the numbers on an Excel and thinking, this is crazy. We have over $1 million owner-occupied loan. Everything we coach, we do, we invest in is about having hardworking debt. And we had the ultimate laziest debt compared to what we were both teaching and also implementing, almost as this contradiction. So we kind of looked at what are our goals now? And we had a reset. And with kids being almost both school, primary school age, thought, actually, do you know what? We want a lifestyle change. I grew up in New Plymouth. I was a full barefooted, run around on the cul-de-sac all afternoon with my neighbors kind of girl. Yep. Mountain, beach, walks, rivers, and heaps of nature. And Taylor's from Cume, you know, very much, you know, farmland. And so we decided we really wanted to get more nature for the kids. And ultimately, what we love is the beach. And so decided we want to get to the beach. But if we were going to buy our own home on Takapuna Beach or any other Auckland beach, the value of the houses is 5 or 6 or 7 times greater than where we were. And we knew that that wasn't a good way for us to add to our lazy debt. So basically decided to look at different options and realize that at the core of it, rentvesting is basically upgrading your lifestyle, you know, going to a location that you want that's usually more premium than where you'd want to or could afford to have a mortgage. So it's a lifestyle upgrade for less of an outgoing, less of a weekly outgoing.
It's a tricky one, right? Because obviously you are someone who does have investment properties elsewhere, and then you're looking at your home and you're saying, this isn't working right. I mean, where do you stand? I get into trouble every time I bring this debate up, but we're going to do it. Where do you stand on the is your own home an investment debate?
Oh dear, okay. Oh, controversial one.
Let's jump right in.
So we should talk about definitions probably, but I think emotively, a home gives security, and I guess, you know, depending on which angle you come at it from, you know, an asset and an own home would be, you know, having that property that over time, at least based on history, would tell us that, you know, we don't know the rate at which it will increase in value, but over a long period of time, you know, decades and decades, we would expect that would make some capital growth, which translates into future wealth, right, that you might access at some point. So in some respects, you can say that's an asset, a harder performing asset. And certainly for property investment, the bigger one that actually impacts your day-to-day lifestyle is the cash flow. So I help Kiwis on an everyday basis invest to add value, add bedrooms cosmetically, improve existing builds as rental properties to get a cash flow from rent. So we want the rents coming in to be higher than the outgoings, the mortgage, the rates, the insurance going out, to ultimately have weekly cash flow put into your pocket. That cash flow is the second benefit on top of the value growth. And that is actually what impacts your lifestyle. Because if the outgoings are higher than the rent coming in, that's a negative impact on your lifestyle, because that's cash you're putting to pay the bank on an investment property that you can't now put into New World to buy groceries, or you can't put onto the power bill to keep your kids warm. So on an everyday basis, it's the cash flow that actually is very, very important. And I think today, compared to 3 years ago when property prices were going ballistic post-COVID or in COVID days, there was this huge focus on capital growth then. But I always say capital growth does not pay your bills, right? So I think there's this huge pendulum swing back to cash flow being actually more important, because that's your day-to-day life. What Kiwis care about at the moment is cash flow. You know, cost of living is so high. And I think rentvesting is one of those options that could be considered, because it is a way to upgrade for a lower cost. And I do know tenants are actively moving houses around the country to lower their rental costs. So they're not just hanging tight to not increase their cost base, they're actually moving to lower it.
Yeah. So what was it like when you started thinking about, okay, this amount of debt we have, you were based in a very expensive area. There wasn't much you could do to fix the fact that if you were going to be buying a house there, it was going to be a lot of money. And, you know, even to say renting there would have probably been also a lot of money. But to be able to say, okay, we're looking at the numbers and we think we could do something different here. And we think we could make this work better for us. It is the idea of sort of being someone with, you know, financially successful, obviously, a whole bunch of investment properties, but to then choose to be a renter yourself kind of works against what a lot of people think of as being financially successful. What did it take to do those numbers and to think, actually, no, this is the right call for us? What convinced you?
You're dead right. Very expensive place to live. So either way, renting or having a mortgage on Greylin is definitely very expensive. Ultimately, because cash flow is what pays the bills, and ultimately that is the number one driver that drives all of our decision making for our investments, we thought, why are we not applying this to our own home and our own life? Because let's just say really round numbers, right? If we have a $1 million mortgage in Greylin for an owner-occupied house, our home, and knowing that there's no income on that, right? An owner-occupied, your own home, that debt 100% depends on income from other sources. Most likely your salaries, your commissions, your bonuses, what you are personally having to produce, right? So unlike a rental property where the rent is largely the source of income to cover that mortgage. So if we compare that $1 million in Greylin as our own home, relying on us to make a living to pay the mortgage, by comparison, when we looked sideways and went, hang on, all of our rental properties, let's just say if that was $1 million of rental properties based on what we coach our clients, that would bring in about $1,600 per week in rent. Mm-hmm. So we have this $1 million over here bringing in no income, relying on us. And that's very typical, right? But we have an option to do this better. We basically had two decisions to make. We think we need to go rent somewhere else because we have this lifestyle goal, but we know that we don't want this lazy debt elsewhere that's going to be bigger. and also, if we recycle, or if we sold the Greylin house and got rid of that $1 million debt and put that into, as the other example, other million-dollar rental properties that would have that income. And that's off our plate. That's off our own personal burden, if you will. Our initial plan was to then sell that property. But as we all have seen in the media every day, the rental market and the rental values are quite soft at the moment. So yes, there's a challenge. So we ran the numbers to look at, okay, well, let's have a look at both the rental market we want to move to in Takapuna on the beach and also the rental market for Grey Lynn. And we were very fortunate, and it really does come down to having the right people in your corner. I call them power teams. You want the right people, the right mindset, action takers that get the job done in a way you want it. We were very fortunate to find an excellent property manager who actually was scouting for us to find a rental on Takapuna Beach. As you can imagine, they don't come up often at all. It took us 8 months to find the right one. We only looked at three. Third one is this one. Because he was so great at navigating that experience for us, as soon as this happened, and it really did happen quite quickly, we said, okay, well, oh my goodness, well, let's quickly look at, if we throw our house in Grey Lynn on the market, what can we get? Sales had not been great for the own occupied properties in the area. So we actually worked out that based on him having great connections, we got these within about a week of us securing as tenants in Takapuna, within a week, that same manager had secured exceptional in New Zealand professional, you know, senior leadership team tenants for our place. We thought this is a win. And he managed both of those transactions, which really made this less stressful than it could have been. We then ran the numbers with him on what rent we could get in Grey Lynn. And that rent almost covered the mortgage that we had.
Wow.
So we decided, yes, the goal is to sell Grey Lynn, but now's not the time. Let's rent it out. Let's secure that and know what we've got there. It basically works. Also, knowing that within our investment portfolio, we were refixing interest rates lower and lower on our investment properties. The increase in cash flow per month almost covers our rent in this new place. So mentally for me, that meant that I knew there was an income source coming in from our investments, which was the ultimate goal, you know, 20 years ago. How do I get investment properties to cover my lifestyle? So this is not an overnight result, don't get me wrong. It's taken years to get here. But the income, as I mentally parked as, I feel comfortable taking on a rental and becoming a tenant because I am paying for it from the rental properties. So that's sort of how, hopefully gives you an insight into how my brain was working around the numbers there. If you're listening or watching and you have not bought either property, your own home or a rental, one thing that might help you think about what's right for you is if you're thinking, do I rent vest or do I purchase my own home? Have a chat with a really great mortgage advisor to understand how moving in either direction will impact your next move. A really great broker is going to not just be transactional at, hey, here's the sale and purchase agreement. Let's get you into a home or let's buy this investment property. It's having a long-term strategic conversation with them around, here's my ultimate goal. How am I going to get there sooner? You know, for me, I'm impatient. You know, I want results fast. So even my program's called Accelerate. You know, it's how do we make things happen faster? So for me, the decision to rent here was, either we upgrade, like the value of these houses here are 5 or 6 or 7 times more than where our home was, but I was never going to be this age living in this spot. Now, if I couldn't buy this property, I wouldn't buy this property here. I probably couldn't afford it for at least another property cycle. And that means I'd be a whole decade older, possibly, you know, lesser health, less energy. Kids will already be trying to leave home, you know, so... I'm about bring it forward. I like shortcutting time is kind of how I think about things. So rent vesting might be a way to increase your lifestyle, but without the cost base, if you were to own it, is probably a good way to think about it.
Yeah, yeah. And I also want to talk about, because you do have kids as well, right? So, and it's tricky, right? That's one of the big things people often talk about with buying your own home, you know, the stability, the security for the family, yada, yada. So did the family situation add a layer of complication to it? Because I imagine you could end up quite tied to certain areas. You do want that stability and security, school zones, all that stuff. What happened there with the family situation?
School zones, right? Okay, before you have kids, you're like, what's all this chat about school zones?
Yeah, and then you're obsessed. Yeah.
And also, by the way, before you have kids and you're looking for those adult-only resorts when you're on holiday, yes. And then you have kids, you're like, I get it.
Yeah. Why would people want an adult-only resort? Oh, now I see.
So that's the thing. We have an 8-year-old and a 4-year-old. And I guess timing with this decision is you start to think, okay, our 8-year-old, she's getting into her serious years of school, right? So we want to plant ourselves in a place where we feel like we're relatively permanent, at least for the next stage of our lives, and for both kids to be able to come through school with that stability, because you're dead right. That was one of the biggest mental hurdles was, are we going to uproot our family, friend groups of our kids, routines? Now being on the other side of it, I can say 6 weeks into our new home here in Taka, it has been definitely the best decision. Daunting as heck at the time. And when we sort of took certain steps to prepare the kids and let them kind of work out on their own that driving across the Harbour Bridge back into Herne Bay for school is just not the easiest thing to do, rather than just say, we are moving, we're moving and you're moving schools, on the blunt end of the scale, was actually, well, not say anything initially for the first couple of weeks and let her experience and mentally start to see herself. And we had done a lot of research and we've had incredible feedback about schools on the North Shore. And also there are some really great high school options, both private and public. So that was definitely an anchor point of our decision making. You want to, as a parent, manage and support your kids through what is a massive change. And it's one that I had never undergone myself as a child, never moved house until I was middle of high school, and at that point, you're a mature-ish human. you're dead right. It was a huge decision. We knew that we wanted to change her school. So it was more that the timing felt like, let's make that move now and really put her into a style and a culture and a system that we know is going to fit her better so that she can do better for herself.
Well, on that note, I guess, is it, you say it took 8 months to find the right property, and I can totally imagine. And while you're looking, are you also sort of talking to the landlord and saying, hey, we've got a family. We would like this to be, well, do you want it to be long-term? And what sort of conversation is had there,
Yeah. So, and I know it might sound like this is maybe not a mainstream situation. We wanted to move onto the beach but the opportunity is that rents are cheaper than they were. So the timing was also good for us to decide to go renting into a place that is a high cost base, because actually if we're going to make the jump, it is good now, right? We also found out this property had been vacant for a number of months. So we knew that there'd be a bit of room to negotiate too. So that helps us. And we did make sure that our property manager was talking to the landlords to understand what their goals were. And we did, and we do know they've owned the property for decades. And combined with that, they live next door. So it's really, I guess, one of the more unusual situations. They are in their mid-70s. And as I can see, in terms of their strategy, they have two, beachfront properties that hold all of the, may not be all, holds a ton of wealth. And, unlike younger investors where that wouldn't be possible to have, such a heavy asset with that debt, I would say, looking from the outside, they would have a lot of wealth there anchored in these assets that, if they go up in value every year, that's easily six figures, every year. So that's a wealth machine for them in their home, plus this place as a rental next door. But they're also deriving income. This is their retirement cash flow, right? So they are holding onto these properties because they are the definition of a finite asset. To your question about stability, we're feeling really stable. On the actual tenancy itself, we are on a 12-month fixed term. I think we're quite secure in that if we look after the look after the property, evolve this relationship with them, and it feels like a home. Taylor and I were talking about this morning. We thought that we would think we felt different being in a home we didn't own, but we really don't. We really don't. It feels great.
Well, because that was one of my big thoughts, would it feel different going from owning to renting? Because I did feel quite a big mental difference when I went from renting to owning. I felt very differently about my first home. I mean, partly I think it's such a slog to get into that first home. You finally get there and you're like, oh my God, I love this house more than I've ever loved anything in my life, to go the other way, I was like, would it feel differently? So you haven't felt, you do feel homely.
The thing that I would say is different is I'm probably a more, because I care so much, and I think it's because we have a relationship with our landlord. So I guess, you know, maybe a slightly different take on it then is because we live next door and because we know our landlords, there's an emotional relationship developing. And so I want to do good by them, you know. I had no clue who they are. Of course, that would be a bit different again. But when we have guests around or other people's kids around, I am a little more hyper aware of, please don't damage or knock anything, because, you know, that then is on us. And because we have this relationship with our landlords, I want us to do good by them, you know. So taking extra care, making sure that we look after the property. I mean, you should anyway, but I think because it's not ours and we can't just decide to get a handyman and do what we want if something occurs, we do need to be a bit more sensitive to that. So that's definitely, I guess, a duty of care that I feel that's a bit different. I mean, to be honest, the tenancy laws are so liberal these days that, you know, we can hang artwork. I believe we can have pets, you know, unless there was a particular reason that they might contest. That's basically in the law now. You know, you can have pets. So I think being able to, well, the law is about being able to enjoy your home as a tenant. But that's not to say that you're not more excited when you buy your own home, your first home, right? Because I totally remember that feeling as well.
I think there's a lot that goes into that feeling.
Oh, my goodness. I know. And because that is such a huge sense of accomplishment, so I definitely don't want to detract from that in any shape or form.
Did you know your kids' money mindset could be locked in by age 7? Julia from our friends at KiwiBank shares how to raise kids who are smart with their cash and what you can do now to shape those habits early. Listen to the episode from 19 June. By age 7, your money personality is locked in. But can you change it? This is Making Kiwi Better Off. This is Kiwi.
You've made some great points there in terms of getting to know your landlords. Great. And, you know, that there are, you can have pets, you can hang out, you can do all that good stuff. What about in terms of if they changed the price and if that changed to the numbers? Is that ever on your mind? Was that even a discussion with them?
It wasn't a discussion with them, but I know what you're saying. I think that's where that mental calculation came in earlier, knowing that for us, we were building up to this point where we have investment properties for that purpose of them covering our lifestyle goals. So that's a long-term thought, that if that's something you were interested in, that's something you can add to your, you know, your thinking. Definitely increasing costs are of a concern in any shape or form, right? So you need to make sure you're not moving to a place that's absolutely at the top of your capacity. You don't want that mental load on top to have that concern. There's enough to juggle these days. So you need, I would say, you know, keep it within a safety net of what's going to work for your lifestyle. The way that rents have historically grown has been around 4.7 to 5% per annum, per year. That's currently not the case. They are actually going backwards as supply has come on. For the foreseeable, at least we have a fixed rent. It's 12 months. You know, every 12 months, there's a risk of a rent changing and possibly increasing, right? Mm. If you can allow for the assumption of what history has performed at, you know, 5% year on year, as long as you think about that when you're deciding, especially if it's to take on an increased cost, provision for that, you know, so work out what is your means to provision for that. Is it that you have an investment property? Is it that you have a bonus coming that you know you can park away and get a bit of interest on? Or can you invest that somewhere and get a better return to offset that? You know, just think about, I always think about puzzle pieces or chess pieces. What is going to pay for this? And so if you have an investment mindset, it's kind of looking for another source of income to help pay for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm loving the way that your mind works on this. You're clearly like very much a numbers person, which is something that I sometimes struggle with. So I love being around people like you because you inspire me. I'm like, yes, yes, numbers. They're not terrifying. We can do this.
Oh, thanks. I did get a little bit nerdy and was talked about, but yeah, you know, but this is the thing. You might, you know, if someone who's not familiar with myself or my story might be thinking, well, okay, that's fine. You know, thinking about Takapuna Beach or what have you. And I realized that the numbers on this are, you know, maybe that sounds quite high risk, you know, but, you know, and within the context, this has been a long time of planning and executing, sometimes very well, sometimes poorly, especially in my earlier property investment days. I've always pursued a renovations focused progress, again, just trying to make things faster. But there were so many things I did wrong in my early renovations. I've cost us a lot of money. I've cost us having to move in with my in-laws for a period of time when it didn't go so well, to get back to base with a newborn. You know, it's not a linear process. There are a lot of learnings and then a lot of things that didn't go well that are now out of my portfolio. But that takes time. You know, it takes time to remove the speed bumps and come back to then elevating, right? Elevating yourself from what you learn. Yes, I take risks, but they were step-by-step, very calculated risks. This is dozens of personal renovations where I was on the tools and the paintbrush and, you know, taking some hard knocks and not doing things well to get to here. You know, your version of this will be different based upon where you're at in your life, but also your investment life.
Yeah. And talk to me a bit more about that, right? Because here's the interesting tension, I think, especially as someone who has experience as both an investor and now a renter, right? So as you said, right at the beginning of our chat, when you are investing, and especially at least for your strategy, there's different strategies, but the really common one, you want to get in as much money as you can to cover your costs. You want to make sure that you are not putting in too much from your own pocket to top up that investment. Meanwhile, the whole idea of the rent vesting is that you can go out there and hopefully be paying less money as a renter than you would have been as the homeowner. So how does that stack up in terms of course, a property investor is wanting to get more money, you're wanting to pay less. Which way does it fall? Can you have both?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I would say for us, at least personally, was, okay, are we going to go and take on rent that, you know, we're needing to make sure we can pay on a weekly basis? And I think the underpinning answer to enable that decision to be a yes was because our core drivers to invest and build, you know, continue to build our investment portfolio for our family and our future family and, you know, as a legacy, I guess, was that we want to be able to take on this rent as long as we can continue to pursue our goals. So let's say if we took on this rent and it meant that that rent per week stopped us from being able to buy an investment property next month, next week, that is probably not the right decision for us because that is now prohibiting our next step, is how I think about it. However, we already know and we are actively on, you know, making offers, trying to buy investment properties today. So that has been achieved, right? We have not stopped ourselves from being able to move forward. So the question for you is, what is your next step and what do you want to achieve next? And if you're considering reinvesting and that still enables you to move forward, then maybe that could be a fit. In fact, when I started in 2007, I was working for a major bank at the time, and it's through that job as a business analyst, a corporate analyst, I would see these very successful business people. Every single one of them leveraged their own home to buy a business, or through their business success, they were investing in properties. And that was the connection that I identified. It's not something I was exposed to growing up. So that was through that job, that penny dropped, with the help of some incredible clients that sort of took the time to sit me down and explain what I had sort of noticed. And I bought my first property as an investment property and split that into two rentals. Fumbled through it, had no idea what I was doing, you know, pulled a lot of people into the mix. But through that, I saw, A, I had created some wealth, which I'd never had before. I bought that first property. It was with my boyfriend at the time. My share in that deposit was $5,000.
Wow.
So he was a better saver, as you can tell. And already.
Thank you, ex-boyfriend.
And I was a bank staff member, so I had a discount on the lending, which helped. But also that's when, like, you, if you're listening, you won't even imagine this, but the deposit was between 0 and 5%.
That's insane, isn't it? Like, looking back at that.
It's wild.
So totally different time.
And so that was definitely, without question, a lower barrier to entry for sure, right? And so I'm definitely not contesting that to anyone. But being able to get that first step on as to buy that first rental and then to split that into two, A, I created some form of net wealth, which I'd never had before. And also those two incomes. When we bought that property, just pre-global financial crisis, interest rates, fixed rates, were about 9%. And so even with those two rents, it was still negatively geared. So what that means is we were still having to tip in money from our salaries to keep the bank happy on top of the rent. So knowing that, you know, having two incomes on one mortgage, we created that and that was still, you know, costing us money. I did see, though, that that became a path, or that was a light bulb for, if I continue to do this and nudge value and cash flow ahead, this is something that will enhance my life that is currently only funded by my salary. So I did see that as another avenue to improve my lifestyle. And I did some things well. I also did some things really not so well, but the learnings from those helped me further refine year by year by year, because it's not a quick, it's, you don't make success through property quickly. It is genuinely through time and improving.
Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. And this is why I always say to people, getting started, just as soon as you can, just getting going, making whatever little step forward you can. Because as you've said, you know, everything hasn't been perfect. Some mistakes you have to make the hard way. You've got to get going in order to get those mistakes done and through and onto the successes.
Exactly. And it's far easier to course correct the younger you are. You know, you have time to fix this. I hear this from, you know, formal or informal mentors who are older. They say, you know, the time to take risks is when you're younger, because you have time. Time will fix them over time, you know. So it's an interesting sort of axis, though, isn't it? Because the younger you are, the less resource you generally have. But the older you get, the less energy and health you generally have. So it's a tricky one to navigate and to balance, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I often say when you're younger, you have all the time on your side, which can make a little bit of money work a lot harder. But of course, that little bit of money you have, it's probably quite little. It's really hard. I do not deny that when you're getting started, you stand at the bottom of that mountain of trying to get some sort of financial independence. You stand at the bottom of that mountain and you're looking up and it just looks insurmountable. But you do get further than you think faster, but oh, it's hard starting. Coming back to the rent vesting, you mentioned earlier about on your rent vesting journey that you said having a good team, so important. Totally agree. Amazing. On your team, to make this work, would someone also need a good accountant? Because I'm thinking things like interest deductibility. Like, do you need to be doing those sorts of things to make the numbers work for rent vesting?
Yes, definitely. So with us moving from our home, so our owner-occupied home, if you think bank speak, that was structured as our, you know, personal debt, right? So at that point, there would be no interest deductibility on the Grey Lynn home because it was a home. Now our accountant, our advisory team, of course, needs to be made aware of these changes, because that is now a rental property. It's an investment property, making income from tenants, and so that income becomes interest deductible. So yes, very important to have discussions with your accountant before you make any changes to make sure they can correctly guide you through any potential steps that might be personal to your situation. Maybe based on the strategy they already had for your home, there might be a need to move it into a different structure when you rent, you know, when you go rent vest and move out of it. Definitely make it proactive. Yeah, for sure. Because along with that, if you are moving the home in terms of entity, that could be deemed technically a sale of that property. So how long have you had that home for? Have you got a history of moving homes quickly? In which case, is there a risk that the IRD might think you're flipping homes? You know, is there a risk of capital gains tax for you? If you're refinancing, there will be thousands of dollars of legal fees to engage your solicitor to move that property. There are different costs that could be implicated from your decision. It's not simply go rent vest, but, you know, what is that ripple effect and what are the costs that might come from it? So yeah, really great question, because costs on the back end, what are you leaving behind that you need to clean up? You want to think about that and have a plan for that up front. Don't get hit by some surprises that is going to further add to your cost, you know?
Yeah, we hate a surprise bill. We hate them very much. No thank you to those. Look, if someone else is thinking about this, because I think as well, I mean, your situation, I think, is quite unique, as you've said. But a lot of people might think about this, particularly as a first home strategy, if they're stuck somewhere like Auckland or Queenstown, it's very expensive. And so I have talked to a lot of first home buyers, particularly about the possibility of rent vesting. So if someone is thinking about this and they're thinking, I would like to do this, I would like to make it work, it's such a huge combination of both life and money that it can feel very high stakes. So what should people consider if they're considering this for themselves?
If you are yet to buy your first property, whether it's owner-occupied, a home, or I sound like a bank, whether it's a rental, whether it's a rental or going to be a home, definitely talk to your broker, because a really good broker, because what you want to think about is two things: potential costs for that first, for that decision, for the immediate decision, but also long term, but also time. What's the impact on time? My brain always goes into time around, you know, if my goal is to be on the beach, how quickly can I make that happen, right? So how can I reduce costs, or how can I reduce that friction to get there? If your goal is to ultimately to become a property investor, if you buy your own home first, understand that the debt on that home is needing to be funded by your personal income that you're going to work for 9 to 5, say. Therefore, there is a debt to income limit, right? So that is a debt that's dependent on your income. It's using up your debt to income ability, capacity, much more quickly than if possibly you bought an investment property, a rental first, that has income against it. So the decision for one versus the other will have some sort of impact on time as to how quickly you can achieve your goal, whatever that is. So it's really important to think about that. I do mostly have a client base that is investors, but I also do have a growing number of clients who are rentvestors. So they are couples in their late 20s or early 30s usually, and they have, like, for example, I have a couple who are in their late 20s now. They've just had a baby. They have always rented, and when they had enough cash as a deposit, rather than put it into their home, first of all, their mental thinking was, we love the home we're renting that we live in and we've lived in for a few years, but we want to have rental properties. So they said, well, we know if we put the cash we have to buy our own home, it's not going to be as nice and as comfy as the one we're renting. So they came to me and they now have completed 2 cash flow hacks, which is my method of buying existing builds where we find the right ones where we can add another bedroom internally. And in 6 weeks, say you buy a 3-bedroom house, you turn it into a 4-bedroom rental in 6 or 7 weeks. That then is, say, a $500,000 debt, perhaps, you know, in the regions. You know, it might be in New Plymouth. Let's spend $400,000 on a purchase, have a buffer of $100,000 for a reno, so $500,000 all in. That is bringing in $700 to $750 per week of income. And with current interest rates, they are making cash in hand at the end of the day. So they've just had their first baby. They're making money from a rental property. They're living in a home that's better than what they know they could otherwise afford. So they are moving forward. And they now have 2 rental properties before they've even bought their own home. For them, that's success, because they love where they are, and yet they've still managed to pursue their investment goals. If they were otherwise buying their home first and then having the baby, you know, something to think about is then the mum is possibly out of work for a while. So if there's no passive income or any other income coming in, that mortgage then needs to be held up by, you know, the dad going to work. So those are 2 very different situations. If the goal was still yet to buy a rental property, that rental property is probably parked for a good couple of years, you know. So 2 very different timelines happening there.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Okay. And, you know, we've mentioned earlier, the numbers often a bit intimidating for people. How do people start in terms of crunching the numbers for themselves as well? What sort of things should you be looking at there?
I guess the comparison of, as I sort of came to at the beginning, if you had $1 million, you know, this is just because it's simple numbers, but $1 million of debt, you know, if that is your own home at about a 4.8% interest rate, you know, that's just interest. So let's say $48,000 of outgoing per year. That's from your salary to pay that home mortgage. But on top of that, most likely because it is your home, the bank will likely put you onto a principal and interest structure, right? So roughly speaking, that might be maybe $2,000 or $3,000 per month on top of that for $1 million loan as repaying the principal, the actual debt amount down, as well as the interest that they want to make off of that, you know? So that's roughly that outgoing. On top of that, you also have rates and insurance. Insurance for a year on your own home is, you know, it's ticking up. Gosh, insurances are going up between 20 and 35%.
Oh, it's insane.
Somewhere between, you know, $2,000 and $2,500 for insurance on your home per year is probably a good ballpark. And then your rates. The smaller the city or town you live in, generally speaking, the higher the dollar amount of rates per year. Because if you think about that from a cost-based perspective, the council needs to allocate their fixed costs over a smaller number of houses. So it sounds a bit counterintuitive, but the rates per year would probably be between $3,000 and $4,000 a year. So that's your actual outgoings on your own home. Compare that to if you had that $1 million of debt put into rental properties. You know, have a look at locations, look at what the rents are, what's the long-term prospect of the economy you're putting it in. You know, the smaller towns versus the larger towns versus the core cities, yes, they cost more to buy in overall, but rents and demand for a tenant is going to be higher. If you have that $1 million of debt into a rental property, you're going to have income against that. Depending on the strategy you take, you know, it's not the case for all, but if you're adding value and you're doing it a certain way, that should be cost neutral to positive with the current interest rates that we have. And also that means that the tenants are covering the rates and insurance as well. So a couple of different scenarios to think about, but you need to think about the net change to that cash flow, because that is going to ultimately improve your lifestyle or detract from your lifestyle. You know, those are two very different scenarios.
Yeah. Oh, so important. So if people have enjoyed this conversation and they want to keep following you, keep looking at the wonderful tips that you put out, where can everyone find you?
Great. Well, if you're on Instagram, Wolf Property Coaching, follow us there and flick me a DM. More than happy to help give you insights, tell you my story and other detail that might give you a point of reflection for yourselves. Anything I can help you consider, more than happy to. Or wolfproperty.co.nz is the website. If you want to have a look at the info there, some examples of projects my clients have completed, but also in the education page, we do have so many free downloads that you might want to reference and, you know, do a bit of research, have a look. There is one specifically about rent vesting, the pros, the cons, the things to think about. So download that and have a look. But there are also a lot of other information sources there, especially if you are thinking to invest. Lots of tools. So reach out, more than happy. Oh, you can also inquire through the website. Let's have a chat, you know, jump on a Zoom for a while and talk about your scenario and how we can potentially help you achieve your goals.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much for coming on. It's been such a lovely chat. Ilse Wolf from Wolf Property Coaching. And of course, if this episode has been helpful to you, first of all, hit subscribe wherever you listen to us, Spotify, YouTube, all the rest. Make sure you hit subscribe so that you never miss a trick with your money. But of course, as well, you can send it to your friends. Send those Making Sense episodes to keep making sense of the money world together. Until next time, have a great day.
Just a note before you go. This podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.